Mace Fingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, joined as we are every Wednesday at noon by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. And Hutton, in the category of life comes at you fast, this morning there were multiple reports that the Tush Push was going to be banned. And then 3 hours later, never mind, it's okay. The reporting is that the vote was 22-10. The proposal needed 24 votes to pass. I guess Jason Kelce came in as the ringer at the last minute. At the last minute, to strong arm a couple of team owners, perhaps. Maybe he promised a meeting with Taylor Swift. But what were your thoughts on the Tush Push vote? Are you surprised it was this close?
I'm not surprised it was this close, because I think a lot of owners, if you're getting whipped by the Tush Push, you want it outlawed, right? So I view it like, okay, maybe that's why it was close. But look, the whole argument about the injury factor is what I was kind of saying was kind of BS, because I just haven't seen that. I thought they were trying to force that through. And try to use that to strong arm the vote for it. I am surprised. The only thing I'm surprised about is the fact that they held a vote that didn't pass. Normally they just table it again, and if they don't know they have the votes. This was so close that maybe they thought they had it, and a couple of owners decided to go the other direction. I don't mind it. I mean, it's not like every other team can't do it. It's a simple fact that one team does it a lot better than the others. And here's the other fact. As far as the third and one and fourth and one go, the Eagles were third in the league in converting those, behind Pittsburgh and Baltimore. So, like, it's not like the Eagles are far and away the best team when it comes to short yardage. There are other teams that do it well. The Eagles just do one play exceptionally well.
What I have found fascinating about this whole thing is, according to ESPN, the Tush Push appeared in only 0.28% of total plays last year. 0.28%. So minuscule. And yet the Eagles and the Buffalo Bills are the two teams that run it most often, have had the most success. But I have found it fascinating that a play that's less than 1% of all plays run in the NFL last season caused such strife.
Well, and it's like, okay, should we outlaw the quarterback sneak because teams don't take snaps under center anymore, but teams that do convert a first down on fourth and short? Like that I would run quarterback sneak a lot more than what teams do, because I like that there's a conversion rate there that I think is high. Teams don't do it, though, for the risk of injury. This is different because you're actually just pushing players forward. That's where I thought they may tweak the rule but not ban it, is where you can't pull players backwards or forwards or do different things. This is something that they're going to have to make a better argument on if they're going to go the injury route, because the injury concern, the stats don't match what everyone else can back up just by watching the play.
Now, what were your thoughts on the new proposed rule for playoff change? Obviously, the seeding, it didn't pass.
Yeah.
But maybe this is something that will come up, maybe a year or two down the line. But what do you think about what they were proposing?
Okay, did they hold the vote or did they just table it?
The Lions pulled the proposal.
Yeah, they pulled
it. Okay, so they didn't have the vote, so they didn't hold the vote. Here's what I think they have to do. They have to come to a compromise on this, because winning the division has to matter. But I understand the thought process behind wanting to change the way it's structured right now. The way I would do it in the proposal is, in trying to find a compromise to get this passed, if you win your division but you have a losing record, you're not hosting a football game. That is, it doesn't happen often, but in a case where you have the Minnesota Vikings with I'm using them as an example, 12 wins, whatever it was, and they're in a very competitive division down to the wire, and then you have something like the AFC South or the NFC South, like we've seen in recent years, that are limping to the finish line, and don't beat any teams other than their division. I get that sentiment of, we should be hosting a playoff game here. We shouldn't have to go on the road in wild card weekend. Okay, but winning the division structured the way it is right now, it's not going to pass this year anyway because the schedule is set up for divisional games at the beginning and end of a season. They do that for competitive reasons. They don't want people tanking. Okay. They want great games at the end of the season. This new structure would provide that too, but I think it needs to be tweaked a bit where you could still game home field advantage, and that's the price for winning the division, unless you just, you know, you're the worst, you're the best team of a worst division in football, and some of the best teams are left on the outside on the travel window. I think that passes, and I think they're eventually going to hold a vote that passes next year.
Yeah, well, hopefully they keep it the way it is. I enjoy it like this. I think there's some merit to winning your division because it's tough. Now, some years, listen, you're going to have a division where you're the only good team in it, or you're going to have a division where everyone's bad, and, yep, you know, it's just, it happens. Or you got to have a division that is highly competitive, and because it's highly competitive, the win total may not be the way that the next division winner is. So
to me,
that's why just leave it alone the way it is. Winning your division should be an incentive. Now, if you have the best record in AFC and the NFC, then you get a bye. So I just don't think they should change it. But hey, the NFL is going to do what they need to do in regards to making more money. So if they feel it's going to make them more money, then I'm sure they will do it.
You know, that's right. I mean, the wild card team in this new proposal, or what they're tabling, could potentially earn the number two seed under the format. There's also a chance that – excuse me, that's my phone. I'm sorry. There's another chance that the wild card, you know, round could – a division winner could be playing road games. You know, so how do you come to a compromise where NFL owners are going to have a great year – and be able to host a playoff game if they so choose? That's kind of what we're looking at. And hey, I don't disagree with you, Mace. I want the divisions to matter because they do. But I would just go with losing record, especially with an odd number of games, because that's going to happen few and far between. Plus, with the new playoff format right now, if you just compare it to last year, there's not a lot of changes that would have occurred with the matchups we saw in round one, especially in the AFC.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. So, Hutt, what were your first thoughts when you read that the NFL players could end up being representative of a flag football Olympic team?
This was a codlock cinch, Willie, for approval. And here's why. It's not because they want to go for gold. I'm talking about the owners. They want to go for international expansion. And the best, easiest layup for them is to allow them to participate in the Olympics. Put their stars in the Olympics, global audience. You teach the game to countries who don't know American football all that well, and you grow the interest level as you expand across the globe. That's what they're doing here. They're limiting it to one player per team. I know the injury concerns. It's a flag football game. They're playing that in a Pro Bowl anyway, where 100-plus players have the opportunity to play whenever the opt-outs occur. The only thing that I raise an eyebrow to, and I wonder how it's going to be handled, is, okay, is Lamar Jackson going to miss training camp? Is Patrick Mahomes going to miss training camp?
Well, that was kind of where my thought went, Hutt, because I think, and Lamar Jackson probably would be a heck of a flag football player.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember what Pat Spruto, when he was coaching the Cats, used to say all the time. He said there's a particular type of player that excels in arena football, right? A guy that's got to play both ways. You know, there are certain guys that can play arena football
that definitely
can't play NFL football. But there's also some – it's not like it's automatic that every NFL football could step on an arena field, because it's a unique skill set that you're looking for. Flag football strikes me as a sport that is definitely going to be true. Like, I wonder who the best flag football players in the world are going to be. It may not be Barry Sanders and Walter Payton, and you know what I mean. It could be a weird set of people. You're like, wait a minute, that's our best flag football guy. But
I'll
it might
say
be
this
true,
though, Willie. I'm not going to win that open tryout in the United States if the NFL player is going against me for flag football.
we can eliminate you and I and Adam. Maybe even Derek at his age at this point.
The other thing I thought, though, guys,
unless it's
like
a 50 and over,
exactly,
50 and over flag football. Now we're talking.
I'm in the co-ed league. I'm asking myself, too, when I see this, like, who's competing against us? What are these games going to be like at this level? I mean, I don't know.
It feels like
a complete open canvas.
It feels like the dream team in the early 90s.
Yeah, but like, You know, is it similar to 3-on-3 basketball that we saw in the Olympics?
I think it would have some of that vibe, don't you think?
Yeah, and what would it be like if NBA players played that? I think the United States actually would struggle a bit at 3-on-3 mm-hmm. with the way that's set up initially, and then it would catch on. In football, I'm not so sure. Not with the athleticism and just the. The quarterback play alone and some of the players that you could choose from. Yeah, I want to dive into more of this. How many players do you have?
What are the rules?
What right. are the rules?
Who, but also, how long are you going to practice strategy? Together? You got to have players.
Yeah, like what's the strategy of picking one player per mm-hmm. roster across the NFL? Like that's another thing too. I'm intrigued by it. I'm not surprised that the NFL owners, it was 32-0. On the vote, because again, Goodell's mandate and
money.
What his legacy wants to be is international expansion, global expansion. He's going out in 2027, and they're going to replace him with, I think, two people, not one, as commissioner. They're going to split up the roles, and one of them is going to be overseeing all things global. And Goodell's going to go out with that type of look at all the games that they're adding. They'll have an 18th game that's going to be international per team, I think, by then. Yeah, and they'll be coming off the heels of the Olympic Games.
I do want to note, Hutton, that according to Mike Florio, per the NFL, the flag football competition will be July 14th through 21st in 2028, a week before most veteran reporting dates for training camp.
So somebody's going to get hurt.
I thought it was going to be August.
It's going to happen, yeah.
But still, I don't think in a situation like that, it being so close to training camp, I can't see any head coach like, nah, you ain't putting my player out there. You just not doing it. We too close to camp. So, how are they going to participate in this thing?
And wasn't that part of the issue with the NHL pulling out of the Olympics for a few cycles because of the insurance payments, right? The IOC wasn't going to pay the insurance. The NHL teams were going to have to pay the insurance. I believe that's what happened. And that's why the NHL.
I do think that was an issue.
Right.
But I think even on a simpler level, if you take a look at this last Four Nations faceoff, as great as it was, the injury to Matthew Tkachuk is still lingering. Now, his team is still that good that they can win with him at less than 100%. But he didn't play again in the whole regular season. So that's the thing. Like I would definitely say that the odds would tell you somebody's going to pull a hamstring or something and be out for a couple of months or you know, have a non-contact injury that has big headlines that so-and-so is out now for the first 2 months. And you're like, why did we send this guy to the flag football? Who cares about flag football?
One more point on this. Look at it from the player perspective too. And Mace, you can talk to this, mm-hmm. but like everybody can put themselves in the shoes. The NFL players, compare them to NBA from the global perspective, NBA or MLB, hockey with what we just saw. They now have a chance to market themselves globally as well. So like the true like 10 to 15 superstar players in the league can now showcase themselves at the Olympic Games, go for gold, which I think I want a player on my roster that wants a gold medal. And that's what you can do in the other leagues. Yeah, I want that drive.
But I would say,
but man, the marketability of this from all sides from the NFL is just kind of a check in the box. It's a no brainer whenever the vote came up.
And I can see teams around the world saying, you know, we could never have football the way it's played in the USA.
Right.
But it's such a specialized thing, flag football, that if you train and you study and you work at it, you could probably come up with that. You know, we could win in flag football.
And don't absolutely. And don't disregard this. It's going to be big in the United States because girls are going to start playing flag football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the NFL has already invested in a professional women's flag football league. So that's also going to be part of this. They're going to my high school right now is playing girls flag football. This for TWSAA.
Yeah.
So don't put that in all the back burner either. This is about, you know, the United States push too. The NFL is going to be behind those types of leagues for female athletes to get involved in football.
All right, I want to ask you one about University of Tennessee baseball because it's an interesting position they're in right now. They are the king of the mountain. And we've talked over the last few years, Hutt, about the way they play the game, right? It is in your face. It's Cobra Kai. And they lean into it. That's their thing. But I think as it goes by year, I think the league kind of gets used to it. It's not the first or second time they've gone against it. My theory, anyway, is it's a little – you deal with it easier. It doesn't have the same effectiveness after a certain period of time. But give me your thoughts on the unique section of Tony Vitello's tenure that they're in now, as the guy that everybody's trying to knock down.
See, I view it as how would I describe this? It's like the guy on the team, on the opponent's team that you hate, but you would love to have on your own roster.
Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah.
Good example.
There you go. Like, yeah, it's just, you know.
Matthew Tkachuk would be another one. Yeah.
Yeah, another good one. It's the irritant. It's another part of the noise that you have to block out from being a distraction in the middle of a game. If I'm playing from a fan perspective, I think it's great because if you love or hate the idea of what you're watching, it's polarizing.
No doubt.
And I think that's great for the sport that has really caught on in recent years. I don't know if you guys are agreeing with me or not here, but I'm not saying take it up another level. I think it's at the level it can be. But as long as – if everyone's doing it, then I would say this is a bit too much. But the fact that you have the – there's always that one that one group or that one player, that one coach in every sport that just kind of just gets at you. And SEC baseball's got it. And, you know, college baseball's got it with Vitello. And the thing is, you have to be willing to lean into it if you're that team.
And they lean into it. I'm curious.
They recruit to it.
That was another thing that I'm curious is, do they recruit those types of guys? I feel like that's got to be part of the equation.
Right?
Yeah. And so now I'm curious if they have to go on the road to defend their title, which they might. They might squeeze in a home regional in the first round, but it may not be as easy a road as it has been.
That's true.
It's ever easy.
That's true. And I mean, look, it's could it work in reverse? Could the trash talk then go at them and kind of fire them up a bit? I don't know. We've seen things from that team this year from Vitello we haven't seen since he got there, right? Like just with how they're losing home series and doing other things. Like they kind of need a kick in the butt, so to speak. And hey, I mean, look, for another team to rise up, and either it was Vandy with the great coaching job that we've seen from Tim Corbin, or if it's another program that comes up and knocks them off the mountain, that's another great, you know, feather in the cap for the conference, that you have another competitive league, potentially either a renewed rivalry or another rivalry that's kicked off.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Hutton, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll chat next week.
Yeah, always enjoy this, guys, and have a great rest of the week.
You as well, Hutton. 615-737-1025. Quickly, a bit of not really important breaking NFL news, but if you were hoping that the Titans would be on Hard Knocks this year, I'm sorry, it's not happening. Hard Knocks training camp will feature the Buffalo Bills, and the in-season Hard Knocks will feature the NFC East. So if you were hoping for the Titans to be on Hard Knocks, I'm sorry, guys. Try again next year.
Oh, well. They didn't get a televised game. They don't even get Hard Knocks. Man.
I still would love to have the three of us, like, if that ever happens, and we are DVD in a future Hard Knocks, we've got to learn the art of being in the camera shot. Find the camera and just have us with the, you know, arms crossed, just looking like big-time media people, just getting it. We got to get in, not left out on the cutting floor.
Yes. Yeah. We may have to get wireless mics. So we can walk around as we're doing a show.
Yeah.
Hey.
I think with D-Mace, there could be a possibility they would want to mic you up. And that way, Adam and I will just get near you. And then we'll just start yelling stuff. And maybe something's funny. And they keep it.
I would just be shouting into Derek's chest.
Hey!
Did you see that play, Derek? Wow! That was incredible! Hey, that was me.
Oh, man.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, which Titans coach other than Brian Callahan is under the most pressure this coming season? 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game. This week's Nashville's best deal is Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon with a buy one, get one free admission. Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon, where parking, tubes, and sunscreen are always free. Get this great deal now at thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Talking Titans coaches. Clearly, Brian Callahan is under a lot of pressure this season. A 3-14 record last season. Hell, we were talking about his point-based reward system in off-season training activities to start the show. I want to know which coach other than Brian Callahan is under the most pressure next season, and I would like to offer my choice. I do think that the most popular choice will be Bill Callahan. I don't know if I'm required by law to say, Bill Callahan! But I think Bill Callahan is going to be the choice. I'm going to say Denard Wilson. And I looked up some Titans defensive stats last night that I found fascinating. So we know that the Titans finished second in the NFL last season in yards allowed per game. But they finished 30th in points allowed per game. I can't imagine there has ever been a discrepancy like that in NFL history. I don't know that for a fact, but I can't imagine there has ever been a team that finished this high in yards allowed per game and this low in points allowed per game. They had 11 interceptions, which was tied for 19th, 32 sacks, which was tied for 29th. And now I do want to give his unit, to be fair. I looked this up according to Pro Football Reference. Opposing offenses, the average starting field position against the Titans last season was the offense's own 32.3-yard line, which was third best in the NFL, or third worst in the case of the Titans defense. And that, I'm sure, has a lot to do with the number of short fields that Will Levis turnovers forced the yes. Tennessee Titans to have to defend. But again, I just look back at this discrepancy. Second in yards allowed per game, and we've talked about why yards allowed per game is not...
It's not the right
it's
metric
It's not
to
the
look
right
at.
Metric. Mm-hmm. But again, second in yards against per game, 30th in points against per game. That is a wide gap.
And what two words come to mind? Red zone.
That as well.
It means that they did not buckle down in the red zone as well as they're going to need to.
So, for all of those reasons, I put it on Denard Wilson. I think Denard Wilson, the defensive coordinator, is the Titans coach other than Brian Callahan, who is under the most pressure next season. What do you think, Derek Mason?
Well, I'm looking at this, and you're right. I think Denard Wilson does need to show, you know, improvement in certain areas on his defense. I'm sure of that, because even though they were, you know, in total defense, they were ranked high in yardage. If you looked at the point discrepancy, they gave up 27 points, you know. So it's like, yeah, you were the number two, but you gave up that many points. But if you watch the games, you understand a lot of it was just, hey, put in a bad position, but they still have to stand up tall as a defensive unit. And I think you're right. One, because of the quarterback. I think if you have a better defense, it takes a little bit of that pressure off the rookie quarterback, because make no mistake, he will be the starter. To me, It's the tight ends. I think Luke Stocker, he has to get these guys to plan. Over the past 3 years, I put this in and I was did some research. Over the past 3 years, the Titans' tight ends have amassed 14 touchdowns in the past 3 years. Kittle's has 25 touchdowns over the last 3 years. One guy, 20-something touchdowns. And as a group, you've only managed 14 touchdowns. And then your starting tight end over the past three seasons has only had 6 touchdowns. He started off slow just about every year and sort of picked it up at the end of the season. They can't have that anymore. They have to show true development at this position. This needs to be, and I know we had TD on last week or earlier in the week, and TD talked about maybe the tight end is not a focal point. But I think when you have a young quarterback, that tight end becomes increasingly valuable to the quarterback. So they have to get more production out of this position. They didn't go out and they had an opportunity to draft a tight end last year in the first round. They didn't get Brock Bowers. You saw what he was able to do in
Oklahoma. Turned around and became an all-pro.
Exactly. So you had an opportunity to get you an all-pro, but you chose to go another direction. And I get it because you had so many holes to fill. So I'm not you know, faulting the Titans for doing that. But when you have a playmaker at that position, man, oh, man, it changes everything for you as an offense because you're able to do more things. You're able to flex that guy out. So to me, Luke Stocker has to get this tight end unit. He has to show more. They have to show more development, and they need to be a valuable asset for the offense, and more importantly for the quarterback this season.
I think that's a really interesting angle to take with Stocker, and because I did not gravitate towards him with this answer, but I think Adam, you were spot on the Denard Wilson. I think this is important for him to build an identity. What the good defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators to a large degree too, but defensive coordinators, they have an identity that they can play with year in and year out. As the pieces move around some, you keep that identity. I think he came in with the way that he wanted to play, and year one was tough because it was very different than they had been playing. And what's unique about Denard Wilson's philosophy is it kind of goes against the trend that a lot of teams are playing with now. A lot of teams don't play the aggressive, where's the pressure coming from? We're getting to the quarterback. We're going to come after you with some timely blitzes. It runs in cycles, but right now the trend tends to be play back, give ground, don't give up the explosive play, and buckle down in the red zone. They were predicated on pressure and turnovers, and what did they not create last year?
Turnovers.
They didn't create any turnovers. They really didn't get after the quarterback. And as you look at this team, you kind of wonder, who's going to get to the quarterback? I don't see it. So how is he going to play that identity? That's a test of a coach. It's like we talk about with Andrew Brunette. Andrew Brunette wants to play a certain way, but his personnel dictates that I don't think they can play that way. Denard Wilson may have to decide, what's the best way to play with this group of players, given that they don't have a ferocious edge rusher? They can't get to the quarterback with four guys. And in this day and age, if you do blitz, these quarterbacks are really good at finding the open guy. If you don't get there, you get burned. So I think it's Wilson for a couple of reasons.
And I think with Denard Wilson, before becoming the defensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans, he spent 2023 as the defensive backs coach with the Baltimore Ravens. Mm-hmm. You know, he worked with John Harbaugh, obviously. He worked with Mike McDonald, who went on to be the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. And I think some Titans fans were hoping for a little bit of that Ravens spice on the defense. And I don't think we got that.
Well, a lot of it, I think, had to do with the injuries that that they amounted. In a secondary, you were relying. Your thought was you brought in two veteran guys. Veteran meaning, you know, they played. They have been playing. If not their age necessarily, but you brought in two veteran corners. One is considered a top four or five corner in the National Football League, and the other's considered just a really good corner in this league. So everything was predicated on the thought those two guys would be out there. Come to find out, they, you know, come to the beginning of the season, they're not out there. Well, they are, but then they end up getting injured. So now you got to play the rest of the way. You still want to play that aggressive style defense, but it's like I don't have the corners that can necessarily do it. So what do I do? Do I pull off and try not to bring pressure? If that's the case, we'll never get pressure. That's the Titans' problem. They don't have somebody that can legitimately, on the outside, I'm not talking about the two guys in the middle, but even though Simmons needs to get some more sacks, he does. He needs to play better this year than he did last year. But I'm not talking about the bulk of the sacks coming from the two interior guys. I'm talking about the outside guys. They got to generate more sacks. You got to have a double-digit sack guy. And I'm not talking about a guy that, on the last game of the season, he gets one or two sacks and now he's reached 10. No, you need a guy that's pushing double digits after, like, 12 games, 13 games. That type of guy puts pressure on offenses. And the Titans right now doesn't have that guy, or at least we haven't seen him.
615-737-1025. Which Titans coach, other than Brian Callahan, that's the key word there, or key words, other than Brian Callahan, is under the most pressure next season? We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game.
How much was the selling point of Bill Callahan part of what attracted you here? I mean, do you feel like he can unlock your potential to reach even a higher level here within this offense?
I do. Just looking at some guys that he's worked with in the past, looking at guys that he's progressed, offensive lines that he's had a grasp of, I do. And like I said, we had a good lengthy conversation, and just what he's looking for me, and helping some of these younger guys come along and their roles in their careers as well. So I feel like it's more of a beneficial or mutual relationship, shall I say. Me wanting to come here and help some guys out, progress in their careers, and Bill doing the same for me.
That was new Titans offensive lineman Dan Moore Jr. talking about Bill Callahan. By the way, Dan Moore Jr., according to Next Gen Stats, allowed 16 and a half sacks last season, the most among any offensive lineman with at least 200 pass blocking snaps.
Ooh.
So we hope that for Dan Moore's sake, he does better than that. But in talking about which coach is under the most pressure other than Brian Callahan, none of us mentioned Bill Callahan. Skyler on our text line says, Bill Callahan, this offensive line has been the worst in the league for 3 to 4 years. He came in last year and was supposed to be the Lord and Savior. Bill Callahan has to fix this offensive line this year. And I do get a little nerdy, and by a little, I mean very, very nerdy on this program because that's just my nature. And I've always likened Bill Callahan, at least how we perceived Bill Callahan, as like an attribute booster in a role-playing video game, like Final Fantasy. It's like Dan Moore's pass-blocking technique is a 60, but if he's coached by Bill Callahan, that improves to a 66. Mm. And that's how I thought of it last year. Obviously, that didn't happen, but you're hoping, Willie, that with Dan Moore, and as I said, the sacks allowed stat, it's ugly. But I do agree with Jared when he's talked about Dan Moore. He has said that Dan Moore has been a starting left tackle on a playoff team each of the past however many years with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he plays every game. So you hope that with a steady presence at left tackle, J.C. Latham, another year under his belt, moving over to right tackle, Kevin Zeitler at right guard, growth from Peter Skoronski, you're hoping that this offensive line is set up to have more success than other versions of the offensive line, like the San Francisco 49ers are apparently going to experience by signing both Andre Dillard and Nicholas Petit-Frere at the same time.
Boy, are we going to be watching those two guys on that team. But I think expectation is going to be important here because Bill Callahan has been built up to be this wizard who everybody turns into Anthony Munoz, and we know that doesn't happen.
That's what I'm talking about with the attribute
right,
boost.
Right, you just have this thing. But I think on the other side with the expectations, Dan Moore, if he just looks better than his predecessors, and we have to consider that Latham is now on the other side, right? So his predecessor kind of is Latham, but if he's just better than Dillard and Nicholas Petrie, he's going to look just by comparison a lot better. Now, he's getting paid pretty well because all left tackles get paid a lot of money. Now, he's not the high end guy, but that's what I think is something that I'm curious to see is what is our expectation level of him, especially with Callahan as his coach? Because I would argue that if Latham is a year better, Skoronski is a year better, which is very reasonable. Both of those guys are very young and now have some experience under their belt. They could make a big jump, I think. They have a bigger ceiling, which will strengthen the line as a whole. What did we talk about in the first hour? D-Mace, it's team building.
Yes.
I mean, is there no better bond example than an offensive line, the links in the chain? So if Moore just pulls his weight and is decent and Latham and Skoronski grow, I think the offensive line can't go backwards, can it? It can't be worse.
Before Derek answers that, we do have an update on the Tush Push from Adam Schefter. He has revealed the 10 teams that voted against the Tush Push ban. The Eagles, of course. The the Ravens, the Browns, the Lions, the Jaguars, the Dolphins, the Patriots, the Saints, the Jets, and your Tennessee Titans voted against the Tush Push ban, according to Adam Schefter.
So are you saying we're going to see the Tush Push from Cam Ward this year?
May.
With Tony Pollard, or maybe they'll line up Meatloaf behind Tony Pollard and have him be the pusher, the Tush Pusher.
You want some Meatloaf? Yeah, I'd love some Meatloaf.
You want some? Ah! Some
I think I'll have some. Ah!
I'm sorry, Derek. Please go ahead.
No, I was because, I went back and I was looking at Dan Moore and I was trying to figure out, was that an outlier for him?
Of sacks allowed.
In terms of sacks allowed. And it does almost seem like that may have been an outlier, which, has me feeling a little bit better because in 21, he gave up 7 sacks, and I'm going by PFF. That's all I'm doing.
These are subjective.
Exactly, subjective, absolutely.
So PFF versus next-gen stats versus enter your favorite statistical website here. It's a subjective stat, sacks allowed. So the numbers might be different. So, for example, how many sacks does PFF say that Dan Moore allowed last season?
Last season. Now, this is only regular season. Okay. This is not playoffs,
yes,
too.
Yes, only regular
12
season.
12 sacks.
See, next-gen stats says he allowed 16.5 sacks in the regular season.
Okay,
so I don't know exactly how each service analyzes it.
Exactly.
But however it is, you will often hear that Dan Moore allowed the most sacks in the NFL among offensive
They players. May be – is that just regular season or is that
That was entering the wild card game.
Okay, all right. Well,
he allowed 16.5 sacks.
So, each one is subjective.
Sacks, according to next gen stats.
Was it your fault? However they – sort of chose to make it your fault. Each sort of site has their own way of doing things. But my thought was to look at it and see, is he getting worse or was that just an outlier? Okay, I tend to believe it's an outlier because in 21, he had over 1,000 snaps and gave up 7 sacks. In 22, he had over 1,100 sacks, meaning 1,100 snaps and gave up 7 sacks. In 23, he had 951 snaps. He may have gotten injured, I don't know, and gave up 8 sacks. And then last year, it went up to 12 here, but then 16 other places. So to me, was last year a byproduct of who was underneath center?
I was just about to bring that up. So you started with 2021, yes?
Yes.
So in 2021, Ben Roethlisberger started 16 games. Mm-hmm. Mason Rudolph started 1 game. Mm-hmm. In 2022, Kenny Pickett started 12. Mitch Trubisky started 5. In 2023, Kenny Pickett started 12. Mason Rudolph started 3. Mitch Trubisky started 2. And then last season, Russell Wilson 11. Justin Fields 6.
So it's in each year, they've had multiple quarterbacks underneath center during the season.
In different styles
of quarterbacks. In different styles of quarterbacks. Listen, even at Ben Roethlisberger's elder days, he still was hard to bring down for a sack. They may have had him, but couldn't bring him down. He was able to release the ball. So I do believe last year may have been a combination of the quarterback underneath center or quarterbacks underneath center, why he may have given up 16 sacks or on this one, 12 sacks, because it just jumped. It jumped. However you look at it, it jumped from 8 to 14, 12 or 16. So that if it's 16, that was you doubled it. So I don't want to believe that he regressed as a player. I think it was the situation that it was in, which makes me feel a lot better.
I wonder too how their offense exposed him. Like how often did he get help from the tight end? These are things that would affect that number, right? If he's always having to block. And the point was made right from the first day that, hey, you got to block Myles Garrett quite a bit, a couple times a year.
Trey Hendrickson.
Yeah, you got some guys that you got some dudes. So how often did he get help, and how often was he squared up one-on-one for some of those sacks? I'm sure you could dig into those numbers, but like we were talking about, it's a number, but it's not the only number. There's a lot of different ways to evaluate a fluid 11-man unit. And to single out one guy for amount of sacks, it's probably not fair.
Jeff on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says the Titans had better hope this O-line is much improved this coming year, or no matter who the quarterback, receivers, and tight ends are, this team will be the bottom feeder of the division again. And if the 49ers' new acquisitions end up playing pretty well, that should speak loud and clear to where some of the O-line problems lie. I don't think Nicholas Petit-Frere is becoming Trent Williams anytime soon. I'm just going to throw it out
no matter
there.
Who coaches
I'm going out on a limb when I say this, but I don't think Nicholas Petit-Frere is becoming Trent Williams.
No, he may get a little better, but he's not going to be, at least I don't believe, he will be considered a top tackle in this league. So, listen, when you're talking about the offensive line and the players that they have, I feel good about the offensive line. Now, I didn't feel good about him last year. I just felt good that Bill Callahan was the coach and that they finally got them a left tackle. But the offensive line as a whole knew it was a progress at work and worked even with those guys. But I feel better about this offensive line than I have in recent years because you're adding a guy that has been to the playoffs several years, a guy that seems to be getting better, however you want to slice that last year. And then you got Latham, who started to play a lot better on the left. Now you move him back to his original spot. You got Peter Skoronski, who started to play a little bit better last year. He's developing. Cushenberry, come back. You go get Zeitler. I think this is going, if they stay together healthy, this is going to be a much better offensive line than what we saw last year or the year before that.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on this on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. But coming up next, could a beloved figure in Knoxville, Tennessee, return for another season? He's trying. We'll explain. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.